Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman whom I have been proud to be both a colleague of and a friend of for quite some time is a woman who has conducted herself with great courage and effectiveness in a very hostile part of this war for the free world. Her name is Brigitte Gabriel. She founded and is the driving force behind a tremendous organization, Act for America. Born of her love for this country, which I believe is one of the most important attributes in our society today of what I think of as foreign-born American patriots. She lived as a girl in the country that once was known as really the jewel of the Middle East, Lebanon. She was caught up in some of the horrific attacks of jihadists against Christians like her. It was a honing fire for her. She has borne up amazingly under it and subsequent attacks on her character and on her work. And I am so proud to say that we've partnered together over the years and been able to get some amazing things done. And she is now doing a project that we're going to talk about momentarily that is of surpassing importance. But let me simply say, Brigitte, thank you for all you do. Thank you for doing it so well and for so long. And thank you for joining us from time to time to talk a bit about it. It's good to have you back. Let me just, first of all, say we, over the 4th of July weekend, were treated to not one but two major addresses by President Donald Trump. One at Mount Rushmore and one, of course, at the White House. Both of them had sort of a consistent theme, which was to speak very candidly, very frankly, and I think very courageously and accurately indeed, about the challenge that we're in at the moment, the internal enemies of this country that are on the march. You've done so much, Brigitte, over the years, warning about the dangers of enemies within, particularly, you know, from the Islamists, Sharia supremacist camp, I call it. Tell me what you would say about the present challenge. How would you characterize it? Did the president get it right? And if so, how important is it that the rest of us understand that that's what the nature of this challenge is?
I think that America needs to realize that we are witnessing a Marxist revolution happening in our country right now. We are literally in the middle of a Marxist revolution. And the patriots who love this country all of a sudden woke up and said, when did this happen? How can our enemies be so organized, be so well armed? I mean, when we watch some of these demonstrators showing up with helmets and automatic rifles, and they are dressed with fancy schmancy camera equipment where they are shooting and videotaping, you realize this is not the average person who's doing just a protest about Black Lives Matter. We are witnessing a Marxist revolution. And what the president is trying to do and what he tried to do this 4th of July weekend is make Americans realize that we are truly fighting for the soul of America. We are fighting for America as we know it, the America that was founded by our founding fathers, the America that believes in freedom of speech, that America that believes in freedom of expression, that we are a nation that honors our history so we may learn from our history. Look, we're not perfect as a nation, like many other nations. We have our own problems from the past. But we have done an incredible job in this country, making the best out of our mistakes and learning from them and moving forward in a bigger and better way for all Americans. And right now, our country is literally at a crossroad. We either save America or we lose America, and we have 4 months to figure it out.
Yes, we do. And counting. Brigitte, let me just ask you to drill down on that point you made about the history of our country. Again, you've come here from abroad. You've learned about America deeply. You've become one of the most prominent exponents of patriotism in this country now. Why is it that these Marxist revolutionaries are so intent on attacking both the symbols of our history and really, more importantly, the founding ideas and philosophy and documents?
Because of what America represents. Look, my last book was titled Rise, In Defense of Judeo-Christian Values and Freedom. And that book came in 2018, because at that time I could see, you and I who work on the front lines, Frank, with the work that we do, we have seen the effects that came our way against everything when we were standing up for America's foundation, America's principles, our Constitution, and we saw the attacks up close and personal. The leftists want to eradicate our values, the values that made America a shining city on a hill. They want to eradicate everything we stand for because it threatens their advancement. We are going into the dark ages, you know, and I have to tell you, this is the first time I actually use that phrase. I used to talk with a friend of mine 20 years ago who used to say to me, Brigitte, we're heading into the dark ages. And I would say, Mark, you're so, you know, pessimistic. You can't think like that. That will never happen in America. But seeing the transformation of our youth, seeing the brainwashing of our youth at our universities, Frank, for the last 30 years, seeing they say an overnight success takes 20 years. People think, oh my gosh, how did they become so powerful all of a sudden? You know, we hear the 20-year success story related usually to business. Oh my God, you know, a successful business, you know, it takes 20 years, you know, for an overnight success. But now when we look at the transformation through our education, they started with the colleges and then they went to middle school and they realized, look, the strategy worked so well in college and middle school. Why don't we start in elementary school? Right now we are seeing the brainwashing of our children happening in cartoons, in Sesame Street, on public television. So they are systematically trying to brainwash our people, that America is bad, that our founding principles are not so hot and they are not so great. Our founding fathers were racist and they were supremacists. Without counting the history, and this is exactly why they do not want to teach history, because, you know, history repeats itself because people refuse to learn from history. The reason why I'm so passionate about this issue is because, as you mentioned in the introduction, I come from the country that used to be Paris of the Middle East, the ranking capital of the Middle East, Lebanon. Frank, I saw Lebanon be transformed within 30 years from being Paris of the Middle East to now becoming the terrorist hub of the Middle East, where Hezbollah, the most lethal terrorist organization, control the country and have elected themselves into the government.
Talk about dark ages, Brigitte Gabriel. We have to pause for just a second. We're going to come back for a second segment with Brigitte about a tremendously important initiative Act for America is leading to help those who are in the first lines of defense against the dark ages and the Visigoths and other Marxists that are at the gates or inside them as we speak. That and much more with Brigitte Gabriel of Act for America. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are visiting for a second segment, I'm proud to say, with Brigitte Gabriel, the founder and president of Act for America. She mentioned her book, Rise. She is also the author of Because They Hate and They Must Be Stopped. She's an extraordinary resource on many different levels, not least of which is one that I wanted particularly to both commend you for, Brigitte, and also call our audience's attention to, because this is a project that deserves the support of all of us. Tell us about the campaign that you call Back the Blue.
Well, we launched the Back the Blue campaign a few years ago after Ferguson. when we started seeing attacks against our law and order, against our police nationwide. And we understand that we need to stand up with and support our police, just because, like I mentioned in the earlier segment, Frank, I understand what happens when thugs take over a country and destroy it. Right now, what we are witnessing, what we witnessed just this weekend, the 4th of July, the murders in our major cities because people are standing against the police, vilifying the police, calling to defund the police. Look what's happening to our society. So Act for America right now is launching Back the Blue campaign nationwide. We are organizing rallies nationwide in all cities and counties throughout the nation. If you are listening to us right now on the radio, no matter where you are, go to our website, actforamerica.org, actforamerica.org, and click on our petition to stand with the police, to defend the police. And also, I urge you to email us, send us an email, whether you would like to join a rally to defend the police or lead a rally to defend the police. We will connect you with like-minded people in your community. We will connect you with patriotic people who believe in the same way we believe, who stand with our Constitution, who support our president, who stand with preserving our freedom, preserving our heritage, and preserving law and order in our communities. We cannot live in lawlessness. And now is the time to stand with and defend our law enforcement to ensure security in our community.
Brigitte, so you addressed in the earlier segment why the Marxist revolutionaries are so intent on preventing us to understand our history. They're remarkable. Not that it's uncheckered, it is, but the remarkable history that has made this country the truly exceptional nation that it is. Why are they so determined to defund the police or otherwise demoralize, demean, and dismantle the police of this country?
Because the first thing you do when you want to destroy a society, you have to get rid of the thin blue line, which is the line of defense, the firewall between the peaceful citizens, the citizens who obey the law, who love their country, and those thugs who want to create mayhem, who want to create crime, who want to create their own rule, like the mob rule. And so in order for you to break that dam, which is blocking all that mayhem, which is the police officers, you have to destroy the police. And once you get rid of law and order, then the thugs can take over and they can intimidate the population, they can threaten the population, they can harass, blackmail the population, and then they can put terror in the hearts of the people, so the good people will be afraid to stand up and fight. So, because the people will think, if they destroy law enforcement and there's no police to defend me, I better stay quiet, I better not say anything. This is how societies deteriorate. This is how societies fall into chaos, and that's exactly what they're trying to do in our country.
You know, in the next segments, I'm going to be talking with Anne Sorok, who's done some fascinating research, deep dive, you know, psychological and marketing research, really, into the ideas behind groups like Black Lives Matter. So we'll be getting into this in more detail. But again, Brigitte, you know, in our shared experience, both of us have been vilified for standing up against totalitarians. I'm a little older than you and went through the Cold War period fighting the Soviet communists and then joined forces with you in the period when we were rightly concerned, I think, principally about the Sharia supremacists, both the Muslim Brotherhood here and elsewhere and the jihadis beyond. And then now we find ourselves facing a new existential threat to freedom from the Chinese communists. And it's been sort of this unbroken trajectory of trying to assure that the American people understand the threats these totalitarians, whatever their ideological banner might be, are pursuing. But just to stay with this point about the police and the work you're trying to do to support them, I wondered if you've given some thought, and I'm sure you have, and agree with Tucker Carlson, who's pointed out that much of what's going on here, of course, is not just the Marxist revolutionaries in the street and the people who are the useful idiots, as the Marxists like to call them, who are going along with it, Brigitte, but also the Democratic politicians who are by and large either aligned with them or going along with them. And Tucker suggested that one other reason for trying to defund the police is to essentially trade out the police officers, the law enforcement personnel that we have now, overwhelmingly hugely competent and moral and, you know, righteous officers, with people who will be aligned with them and their political agenda. Is that at work here as well, do you think? And if we were to yield to it, what might the implications of that be?
Well, look, I have seen happen up close and personal in my country of birth in Lebanon, when the terrorists basically get rid of the police on law and order, and then they take control of the government, and then they have their own law enforcement policing the police, so policing the population. So again, I see the same thing happening in America right now. And I agree with Tucker Carlson, and thank God people like him who basically is speaking the truth so boldly in a way that many other people are afraid to speak it. Because we are seeing it happen in our country, and the Democratic Party has a vested interest. You know, it's such a shame that we have gotten to the point in our country where we have the Democratic Party in our country who would rather work with our enemies if that means the destruction of the current administration and getting rid of President Trump. Because they believe we'll sort it out later. Right now, the enemy of the enemy is my friend. So we are seeing the work happening between the Democratic Party and the Chinese government. I mean, look at Joe Biden, and look at family members. Look at even Obama when he was whispering, I think at the GA summit, if I get elected again, then I'll take care of things. You know, nobody talks about that, but we have seen that type of work and association with the Communist Party. And right now, China has a vested interest in destabilizing America and basically getting rid of President Trump, because President Trump finally, we have a president who stood up to the Chinese, and that's why they're working with the Democratic Party. So we are seeing foreign elements working together with people within our own country who want to see a transformation within our own country, pushing for this. And that's why I urge people to go and join us at actforamerica.org. ActForAmerica.org. We're the largest national security grassroots organization. We want people engaged. We want people, you know, involved and informed. It's not enough to just be informed anymore. Education is important, but education by itself is not sufficient. We must be engaged and active. We need people mobilized, Frank. We need people working together as activists, coming together to make a difference for the country, because the left is doing it.
Yeah, your vehicle for Backing the Blue is a great example of how they can get involved. And you make it easy for them to do it by getting in touch with their elected officials or other representatives. But I just want to come back to something you said, because it's so important, this foreign involvement in what's befalling us at the moment. I do not think it is an accident, comrade, as the Soviets used to say, that we're seeing Maoist organizations like Freedom Road Socialist Organization and Liberation Road and hosts of other Marxist outfits in this country, including Democratic Socialists, so-called, pushing towards this revolutionary outcome of taking down our country with help from elected officials who have been associated with them over the years. But in addition to your comment about that ostensibly off-mic statement that the President Obama made to one of Putin's henchmen, there's also an interesting statement that was made by the Chinese Communist Party media when Barack Obama made effectively a state visit shortly after he left office. And he and Xi Jinping were described by these media as veteran cadre. And it just speaks volumes about the degree to which these are people who are absolutely aligned and working against America in ways that are deeply injurious, of course, to, you know, the freedoms that most of us take for granted. And I just want to, again, salute you as a perfect example of the new Americans, if you will, the foreign-born American patriots who understand, because you came from a place that did not have freedom or lost it, in this case, in Lebanon, and how precious it is here. So just a final burst on why we must not let that happen.
We must not let this happen here in America, because we are seeing the writing on the wall, and now we need to stand up and fight while we still can. Frank, you and I have been working together in our fight against radical Islamic terrorism for 20 years, and we started seeing the attacks against our freedom of speech, and you and I were warning back in 2010 why we need to stand up and defend free speech. Nobody listened to us. Right now, all Americans, at least the Americans who love this country, are realizing I can't even speak up because I'm called a racist if I just point out an issue. So now, while we still can, people need to speak up. They need to write letters to the editors. They need to call their talk radio shows.
And they need to back the blue, Brigitte. And we are hard out of time. There's a lot more to do. ActForAmerica.org is a great place to do it. Thank you, Brigitte, for your leadership and for joining us. I hope you'll come back to us soon with further updates on the progress you're making, because heavens knows we need it. God bless you, my dear. We'll talk with you again soon. Next up, we'll speak with Anne Sirach about her studies of the mindset and the policies of the people mounting this revolution against us. That and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. This is going to be an extraordinarily interesting interview, I believe, because the woman who will be our guest is an extraordinarily interesting person. Her name is Anne Sirach, and she brings to bear on public policy challenges of our time some unique and, I think, much needed background in market research on political matters, but also in consumer goods marketing, which is all about branding and, of course, getting inside people's heads and getting them to embrace what you're selling, which has a lot to do with politics, too, after all. What she does, though, in her capacity as the founder and president of the Frontier Center, is to do deep research into people's thinking. What's motivating them? What are they seeking to accomplish? That is an extraordinarily important addition to what passes for public opinion research and analysis, mostly in the form of polling and surveys and focus groups and the like. So it's a delight to have a chance to visit with her, because she's been focused very intensively on, as I say, some of the challenges of our time at the moment. And to get the benefit of her insights, it's a very, very considerable pleasure to say welcome to Anne Sirach. Good to have you with us. So Anne, just give us a little bit of a sense, in your words rather than mine, about the methodology that you use to do the kind of market research that arguably is both distinctive and also much needed.
Yeah, we do something that is under the umbrella of exploratory research, and it's a series of approaches that you use only when past models may not be able to predict the future as well as they had. So we are facing a moment in our nation's history where the polling relies on an old way of looking at how Americans relate to ideas. And so at the Frontier Center, we do very in-depth, one-on-one qualitative interviews with strong, we call them brand champions of political ideas, brands, concepts, policy, to understand what is underneath the surface level reasons we are saying, oftentimes parroting back from the media, that we relate to them. So from the left to the right, up and down, people will say that they relate to even conservatism or the free market and sort of ways that are not very helpful for understanding what is truly motivating them. We call those the deep values, and that's what we teach out. And when I worked in food marketing, there was some scientific research done that said there are sort of seven or eight values that can describe how a consumer relates to their food choices. Well, we've come across about eight or so values in the political sphere that come up over and over again, and then an alternate set of eight values. And that suggests to us that there's these two competitive views of America's future that we track at the Frontier Center as they flow through many different brands and issues, as I said.
Can you give us an example or two of the values that you've most readily identified, and then the alternative values that are also evidently operating, at least within some parts of our mondo politico, I guess is what one might call it?
Yes. Some of the values that we say represent the new frontier, and again, we're focused on the frontier because in the history of America, that was the place where ideas came to bear with survival. And it's where we believe that that American character was truly formed, even after the founding era, when those founders' ideas were applied to reality. And so we call these some of the frontier values. They include anti-elitism, something we call active optimism, the counter of which has been hope, which we heard from Obama. In the frontier sense, the active optimism is that I am part of achieving that hope. Community as opposed to conformity. Coarseness and strength. So there's an affinity for true metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, the ability to be productive. And one of the most interesting to us is what we call exuberance of freedom. And I'll pull that one out for you in particular because exuberance of freedom is a little different from what you might hear conservatives speak about when we talk about our values. We might talk about the free market or capitalism and being free, self-governance, et cetera. Well, exuberance of freedom is the feeling you have when you achieve freedom yourself. It can never be given to you by a politician. You must obtain it yourself. And it must, as we've tracked through our studies, it always comes in conjunction with some sense of danger that you overcome. We tracked this, for example, in the healthcare debate. We looked at how are people who are strongly relating to these healthcare options, you know, do we want single payer? We looked at those who are really advocating for single payer, and then we looked at those who are strongly in favor of sort of getting the government out of the insurance companies, and looked at their values. And then we looked at a third group, and those are the people who are participating in what are called cost-sharing plans. Essentially, they are opting out of both of those options, and they are saying, I'm going to try this third way. And the conservative profile had said to us, you know, we like free markets and healthcare because I want more choices, costs, transparency. But the people who opted out said, I didn't know where this was going to go. I took my family down this path. And then it turned out that I had greater control and I had won over the system. And I was freer, but my mind was free. And that exuberance of freedom has been replicated in a few pockets policy-wise. And that is one of the keys to this new frontier, is replicating our ideas so that they tap into an exuberance of freedom where people are obtaining it themselves.
Anne Sorok is our guest. She is the president of the Frontier Center. And I have to say that just what you've described is so inspiriting. And I mean, these sentiments are what I'd like to think all of us really aspire to. But whether it's, active optimism and a sense of community without having to conform, the strength, the exuberance of freedom, an anti-elitist attitude. I mean, these really seem to me to be profoundly American traits. And you're right, I'm sure, to associate them particularly with the sort of nexus between the founders and the frontier. Founders being, you know, frontiersmen in a way, in their own right, many of them, but certainly those who moved west in due course with Manifest Destiny and all that. So give us the alternatives. I think you mentioned one or two, but the alternative sentiments that you've discovered are operating in parts of our, as I say, political community.
Yes. So at the same time that we see many of these coming up, we see the alternatives. And I should note that oftentimes the alternatives are not only present on the left, although often they are. These alternatives are present on the right as well sometimes. So that's part of the watch out that we sort of have for people, that we shouldn't default into thinking that those who advocate for self-governance are immune from this type of thing. But so some of those ideas, as I mentioned before, are the idea of conformity to community. So looking at how we can signal to others that we are along with them, we are with the cultural community. So it's a great pull for that, especially among our youth, but we're tracking that with suburban women as well.
So this would be political correctness is another way of sort of describing how the conformity is imposed on a community?
Yes, exactly. That's a wonderful way of describing it. And the reason for just a little bit tweak in that language to the conformity is political correctness matters because it allows you to demonstrate that conformity. So that's just a little bit of the difference there.
And whether you're being obliged to or whether you're voluntarily doing it, it's a question of showing that you're with the program. You mentioned strength. The alternative to that is weakness or passivity, or how would you characterize that?
Safety. So a great, so this is an actual personal safety is when we see that sort of tracking as an opposite to strength. The exhibition of strength often comes with a concern for safety, but it's more important that we sort of inhabit that. And safety is something that comes up a lot on the left. And we looked at progressive patriots, people who are on the left but still patriotic. And this came up for them. One of the reasons they say they support, which they do, they say they support rights, and they're defining that differently, but it's for another conversation. They're telling us that we are progressive and patriotic. We support individual rights as constructed by the government, because ultimately that is going to reduce the societal strife. And that will give me more personal safety. And it's really important right now to understand that when we see a lot of societal strife, that you may start to hear people saying they support individual rights, but for their own safety, which is not a productive value.
Hold the thought in. We're going to come back to this in just a moment, but it is striking to me that you said the word, the rights come from your government, as part of the deal that you do to get that personal safety. We're going to talk with Anne Sorok of the Frontier Center about this and what it tells us about the challenge that we now confront as a nation and what must we do about it right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to a really remarkably interesting conversation with Anne Sorok. She is the founder and president of the Frontier Center. She specializes in deep research of sort of the nexus between political ideas and how they're sold to people, well, like food in the marketing business. Anne, you were telling us a little bit about some of the contrasts, and I just wondered, what's the alternative to the exuberance of freedom that you've discovered in your research?
The alternative we're tracking is what we call peace of mind. So this is a desire to have mental health is a buzzword of today. There's enormous stress out there. Suburban women was one of the places that we track it all over the place. They're saying, we just want some of these choices taken off of our plate. Take the agency away. Of course, you alluded to this earlier, Frank. I think the natural state is not to lose agency. And yet, so for those who are saying we want peace of mind, this may be a path to peace of mind, this policy, this candidate, this politician, they're never resolved in this angst they have. Nevertheless, they think that they're seeking peace of mind, but they think the pathway is less agency.
And by that, you mean freedom, really, the liberty to do what you think is best for you when you think it's best to do it. When you use the term agency, I take it. And it's kind of a Faustian bargain, isn't it? It's basically that you'll give up that freedom in exchange for the equanimity that will come of not having to worry about things, not having to have agency, not have to be responsible for, well, your freedom. And you're not going to get the exuberance of it, that's for sure, but you're also not going to get much of the freedom, right?
Right. In two ways, it's the perfect way of putting it. You're giving up, you're saying that you don't want the worry of making these choices, just tell me how I can conform. Tell me how I can be accepted. Tell me how you can raise my child for me in the government schools so that I don't have to worry about many of these things. And I'm not doing it. So that's how it really is the antithesis of exuberance of freedom. It's not just that it's less freedom. It's that you have no hand in it either. So it's an interesting. And I failed to mention to you one of the biggest other values we're tracking. On the frontier side, we call it American exceptionalism. Globalism is this global community pull is the antithesis of that, and that's coming through. I'm not an American citizen, I'm a global citizen first, et cetera.
It's so important, and really that's a subject for a whole nother program with you, Anne, and I hope we'll get you back to do that. I did want to ask you to talk a little bit about some of the deep research that you've done on a group that is very much in the forefront at the moment of our national political as well as policy debate, and that would be Black Lives Matter. And again, let me just be clear with all our audience that we're not talking about the sentiment of Black Lives Mattering. I think we all will stipulate they do, as do others' lives, all of our lives. We're not talking about people who care about justice, racial and otherwise. We're talking about a specific organization that has branded itself as Black Lives Matter. What has your research shown you about where that group falls in this frontier sentiment versus the alternative?
Well, the methodology we use, again, it's laddering, and it looks at the depth of feeling and what we can push beneath the surface and to find about the values adherents of the movement hold. And when we did that research, oftentimes what is called a segmentation emerges and just smacks you in the face that these people are not relating in the same way. And that's the first big finding we had with our Black Lives Matter research, which involved, again, in-depth interviews with people who strongly support the movement. There are three segments according to their psychographic profile. And those are the operatives, the activists, and then the allies. The allies is a term they use to describe themselves, but they are not Black, most often white, strong advocates for the movement. Now, their values are wholly different from activists who are Black. And so that was very important to tease out. And this is, again, what they were telling us. And there's a reason for that, because the allies were telling us that they were actively told, if you are not Black, to remove yourself from the optics of the movement's events. Make sure you are pulling yourself back. And when we first did this research, which is when the movement was first cropping up, this was more new to this intersectionality hierarchy of people according to privilege was a little bit newer. And so when we spoke with people who were in this ally segment, it was sometimes the first time they had been told that they had to censor themselves. And that so it was a very wonderful insight into that moment, wonderful in the sense of remarkable. And what we found is that the allies were motivated by desire for security, community, a lot of fear. And so in terms of our frontier thesis, we're looking at that really their community being under immense attack, and that they had to find some way to communicate they are with that community. The activists, on the other hand, told us that for the first time they had hope that their community would have a different trajectory. And they were telling us many interesting things about the way they perceived past movements to help the Black community. For example, they said they viewed the civil rights movement as a total failure, and they told us why. And the reason they said was because the civil rights movement included white people at the top, and they perceived Black Lives Matter to be more pure in terms of its participation by people who are affected by what is the stated movement's goals. So they said most participants are Black. That is going to make Black Lives Matter more successful.
And this goes back to what you said a moment ago, though, if I understood you correctly, the operatives, by whom I gather you mean the people who actually run the thing, are in a substantial measure white, not Black, and are pursuing an agenda that may not be exactly the one that the activists who repudiate the civil rights movement of yesteryear are thinking of.
You hit it. This is a central tension. The very genuine perception by the activists that this is going to be different. It's very poignant. You know, they think this is the solution. And one of the reasons we tracked it across all these interviews is because of the Black participation. Well, we spoke with those operatives, the third segment. So I talked about the allies, the people who are activist level. They're not behind the scenes. They're not the clipboard people. We talked about the allies. We talked about the activists. Now the operatives. These are mainly, we spoke with white operatives behind the scenes who had been involved with Occupy. They are involved with the Black Lives Matter movement because it gives them a stamp on their resume that says you have been associated with a moral cause. They felt that that was not quite achieved with Occupy, but with Black Lives Matter, it would be. And because the outward image is more quote-unquote Black than the past, again, we know they're managing those optics, that they not only would have that moral cloak on their stamp on their resume, but they also felt that that would allow them to win. So there's a lot to unpack there. You can find the research on our website, newamericanfrontier.org. But that's just one of the many tensions that begin to make themselves known as you conduct this research. One other one I'll just highlight to you that's very interesting, and I haven't really heard talked about. The activists and the operatives really were keyed into the fact that social media had been the mechanism for growing the movement, and that it was not reliant on mainstream media. So others, as we observe this movement from a different vantage point, we may say, well, I don't know about that. But that is a very strong perception. And so that if that were to be weakened, for example, it would have long-lasting effect on how they view how this movement is structured.
Anne Sirok, there's so much more to explore with this, particularly, you know, what should be done if, in fact, what we're dealing with really is a Marxist revolutionary movement with the various attributes that you've described, but with a purpose of really taking down our country. But that will be for another day, hopefully very soon. In the meantime, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work you've just described that you're doing at the Frontier Center. I want to repeat the website where people can learn more about that work, newamericanfrontier.org. Anne Sirok, thank you for today. Let's come back and get more of this out in the very near future. In the meantime, I know you'll keep up the great work, and it's so appreciated. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.